Turn, if you will, to Genesis, the 11th chapter. Most of the time when folks are looking at the life of Abraham, they usually begin in Genesis 12, but we're going to begin in 11, where we first read about Abram, as he was known at that time. And we're doing our Bible profile series, and we're going to look at the life of Abraham. As you're turning there, we're kind of focusing in on Abraham as the father of many nations, okay? And the impossibility of that in from the natural standpoint as we look tonight at some characteristics of Abram's life leading up to when he has his name changed to Abraham. He goes from basically being dead because he's incapable of reproduction. He basically goes from being dead physically to reproduce to three great world faiths. And when I say great, I'm not necessarily meaning a compliment, okay? But they are great faiths, and that is Israel or Judaism, which comes through Isaac, son of Abraham. Islam comes through Ishmael, son of Abraham. And then Christianity, which is the greatest of them all, comes through Christ, which is a descendant of the line of Abraham. And Abraham, he did not just live life or exist. He happened to life, okay? And it's not because he was some kind of great person within himself. You'll see why, I trust, as we look at what made Abraham such a great man, which was the call of God upon his life. But he had a big life now. Think about that. Three currently known world religions stem from this one man. And there's no issue or no, you know, Abraham was not a fantasy or some kind of figment. He is a known, acknowledged historical figure. But he was much more than just a historical figure. So let's talk about his life. He eventually stood against his own kin, his own culture, and his own country. We want to begin reading in verse 11 of Genesis 11. And this is a genealogy that we usually fall asleep on. It says that Shem lived after he begat Arphaxad 500 years and begat sons and daughters. You recall Shem is one of the sons of Noah. And he has Arphaxad, his first son, shortly after the flood. Arphaxad lived 35 years, begat Salah. And we'll kind of skip on down. Salah lived 30 years, verse 14, begat Eber. Verse 16, Eber lived 34 years, begat Peleg. Verse 18, Peleg lived 30 years and begat Reu. And it's very likely that Peleg, in the days of Peleg, is when the Tower of Babel happened. It says that the earth was divided in those days. That could mean the physical division of what modern science has referred to as Pangaea, or we know for sure it has to do with the division of families and nations by languages at the Tower of Babel. So whatever that means, it's significant. It happened in the days of Peleg. It says that Reu, the son of Peleg, verse 20, lived 32 years and begat Serug. Serug lived 30 years and begat Nahor, verse 22. And then let's go down to verse 24. And Nahor lived 29 years and begat Terah. And Nahor lived after he begat Terah 119 years and begat sons and daughters. And Terah lived 70 years and begat Abram, Nahor, and Haran. Now, don't let the listing of the order confuse you if you look deep into the ages and so forth. It's without a doubt that Abram was not born first. If you do the math on when Abram leaves at age 75 and when Terah dies, Abram was probably born at around Terah's 130th birthday. Okay, if that's a big deal to anybody, there's no inconsistency in the Word of God. He just lists Abram first, the same way that the Lord lists Shem first. Shem was not the firstborn, but Shem, of the three sons of Noah, was the chosen one to carry down to the line of Christ. And Abram, of the three sons born to Terah, is the chosen one that leads down to the time of Christ. These are the generations of Terah. Terah begat Abram, Nahor, and Haran begat Lot. There's the father of Lot. And Haran died before his father Terah in the land of his nativity in Ur of the Chaldees. It's very important to understand that the death of a child prior to the death of a parent in the age when these people were living so long, unless there was an accident or a murder or something was very possible that could happen, it was very unusual for them to have a child to pass away before these patriarchs who were living several hundred years. It had a great impact on Terah. So Haran, the brother of Abraham, dies in the Ur of the Chaldees, which is where they lived. And Abram and Nahor took them wives. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai. Remember, her name is changed to Sarah eventually. And the name of Nahor's wife, Milcah, and the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah, the son of the father of Iscah. But Sarai was barren. She had no child. This is another strike against the future of our redemption, because redemption comes through the line of Abram, eventually, Abraham, when Jesus comes. And it comes through a man who eventually cannot reproduce because he's so old, and a woman who never had the ability to reproduce, Sarai. And Terah took Abram, his son, and Lot, the son of Haran, his son's son, and Sarai, his daughter-in-law, his son's son Abram's wife, and they went forth with them from Ur of the Chaldees. This is very important information that's given prior to Genesis 12. And we'll tell you why in a second. To go into the land of Canaan. You get that right there? Because God calls Abram to go to the land of Canaan, and here we see that his father, Abram's father, actually travels with him, which was against what God had told him to do. So Terah goes with Abram and Lot and the wives, and they move to an area called Haran and dwelt there, which I think is interesting. You can't overlook the significance of that name, because he had a son named Haran who died, and then he moves to a city that's called Haran. Obviously, Terah is greatly affected by the death of his son. And the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. Now the Lord had said unto Abram, at a previous time to this, God had told Abram, get thee out of thy country. This is when Abram was living in Ur of the Chaldees, with his father, with his kindred, with all of his people there. Get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house. And we say, what a mean thing that was for him to do. I think you'll see in a moment why it was not mean. It was appropriate. And we'll see that in a minute here. From thy father's house unto a land that I will show thee. That was the land of Canaan. And I will make of thee a great nation. And I will bless thee and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. And I will bless them that bless thee and curse him that curseth thee. And in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed. So Abram departed as the Lord had spoken unto him previously, and Lot went with him. And Abram was 70 and 5 years old when he departed out of Haran. Okay, that's a lot of reading and a lot of information about our Bible profile tonight on Abram, Abraham. He stood against his kinfolk, he stood against his culture, and he stood against his country. Now let's set this in perspective about what's going on there, because we just kind of take it for granted. Oh, Abram, father of the faithful, you know, all of that type of stuff. What was really so significant about this? Okay, we have to understand something about the history of what's going on. First of all, monotheism was taken for granted in those days. Polytheism, the worship of many gods, was what was in vogue, the worship of many gods. You say, well, we can't identify with that today. Maybe a message for another time would be for us to, once again, as I've done in the past, to talk about the false gods that we do worship. We are polytheistic. We have many gods, from the god of sports, the god of hunting, the god of shopping, the god of drama, the god of entertainment. We are so polytheistic. But we serve one true and living God. And monotheism, the worship of one God, was taken for granted in these days. Okay, think about it. These people had come from the days of whenever Ham, Shem, and Japheth and the wives and Noah and Mrs. Noah are relating to them what happened and why the world was destroyed. Okay, you know, think about the things we pick up on whenever we watch a movie or we're told something. Most of the times we don't really pick up on the good. We sort of focus in on the bad, don't we? So you know, as Noah and his wife and the others are relating to the next generations that are coming, and they're coming quick. I mean, it says they had sons and daughters, 20 or 30 children probably, each family. And that would multiply incredibly fast, probably 200 or 300 million within just 10 or so generations, which is what we have here, about 10 generations to Abraham. But they're telling them, this is what happened. The world perished. Because there was violence, because there were these trendsetters, because there were these people making these new weapons and making, coming up with newfangled ideas about multiple wives and all this stuff. And you know, some of those little wicked minds are going, man, that sounds awesome. Yeah, but it's not awesome, because that's why the Lord eventually, the complete giving in to depravity is why the Lord judged the earth, and it was flooded and everyone died and saved, spared Noah and his family and the ones that were on the ark. So that oral tradition is being told generation after generation. Now, get this. This is very important to understand. Noah dies, if I've done the math right. You know, I'm not very good at that, Brother Jim, but if I've done the math right, Noah dies 2 years before Abraham is born. Abraham is 10 generations from Noah, okay? 10 or 11, depending on how you scale it. A long time from Noah, many, many years. And Noah dies 2 years before Abraham is born. Okay? Noah lived to be 950, almost 1,000 years. And Noah was 600 years old when the flood came. Remember that from last time we talked? Okay, now get this. Shem was 390 years old whenever Abraham was born. And Shem lives to be 600. He's just barely through with half of his life. As a matter of fact, if you do the math, Shem died after Abraham dies. How does that grab you? Abraham lives 175 years. That's all he lives. So everybody's lifespan is getting shorter and shorter, down to what we see in Psalm 90 eventually, where it talks about the days of a man are 70, 80, 90, average age. So Shem outlives Abraham. That's important, because there's some evidence in history that they worshiped their ancestors. Well, if you were going to worship your ancestor in those days, and you were worshiping Ham, Shem, or Japheth, they were still alive. You get that? Now, I'm not saying that Shem, I don't believe Shem endorsed that. I don't believe he was like, yeah, I'm approving of this, or they set him up in a temple. But it's very interesting to see, and very easy to see how ancestor worship took root. Because if your ancestor was still alive, we worship our father Ham, our forefather Ham. Well, how many generations back? 9 or 10 generations back. And he's still alive. Let's go see. He can tell us about the flood. Well, if Ham, who was probably a little bit jaded from some of his experiences that he had with his father, you know, he might have twisted the truth just a little bit. He might have made it sound better in his favor than the way things went down after the flood, if you've read anything about what happened after the flood. Japheth could have been the same way. So ancestor worship took root, and that's where you have the rise of ancestor worship in Africa today. When we went over there in 2006, Brother David Crawford and I, we talked with Brother Obey when he was alive, and there was still an incredible presence of ancestor worship. They worshiped their forefathers. Where does that come from? It comes from what they began to do after the flood, because these ancestors lived for so long. I would tend to worship my great, whatever many great grandfather from Scotland or Europe or wherever, if he was still around, it'd be very difficult not to put some kind of measure of weightiness on that, right? So Shem outlives Abraham. So that's very important to understand the context of what's going on in the days of Abraham. Now, Genesis 11 and verse 26, once again, Terah lived 70 years and begat Abram, Nahor, and Haran. All right? That's about 10 generations from Shem, who was the son of Noah. And then Abram marries Sarai, and Haran dies before Terah in Ur of the Chaldees. That is the area known as Mesopotamia. If you want to put it in perspective today, it's in the area of Iran. Okay, that's the same area. It's interesting how Haran is very close to Iran, or however you want to say it. It's also, if you remember a couple weeks ago when I spoke to you about Noah, one of the most comparable flood legends of another nation was the Chaldean flood legend. This is Ur of the Chaldees. The Chaldean flood legend has some of the same names, some of the same information that is in the actual biblical flood legend. And that was by the Chaldees. This is Ur of the Chaldees. So it's the same connectivity there with the flood. They worshiped the moon god in Ur of the Chaldees. What is the significance of that? They worshiped specifically the crescent moon. Now, that's important because that is still around today in Islam. Y'all understand that? They worship the crescent moon. That is one of the symbols of Islam. The culture and the region where Abram was born and raised, Ur of the Chaldees, was overshadowed by the first self-proclaimed king of men, and that man's name was Nimrod. The flame of truth is barely flickering in the days of Abram. It's so bad, Ur was polytheistic. They worshiped multiple gods, but the primary god was this moon god. Now, if you want to kind of think about it and put it more in modern perspective, think about how different cities have different sports teams. You know, the Nashville, is it the Titans, I think? Tennessee Titans in Nashville, the Jacksonville Jaguars in Jacksonville. Well, you know, whether you agree with me or not, that there's some worship going on there. You know, the Atlanta Falcons, or you could take it to the SEC level, which is even a higher level of worship, in my opinion. But think about it in terms of, well, this city has the Titans. This city has the Jaguars. This city has the Falcons. This city has, you know, name it. And that's the way it was in these days. This city has the moon god as its primary god. Don't mess with the moon god. And let me say this too. It's very comparable to wokeism today, because wokeism is a totalitarian mindset. You know, wokeism is not satisfied with you having your own personal belief about something and the freedom to think, well, this is I don't agree with this. No, totalitarianism, which is wokeism, imposes the thought process upon you. You can't even think that the LGBTQ agenda or the transgender agenda or all these other things are out. You can't even think that way. That's totalitarianism. That's a very, very dangerous place. And that's what was going on in the days of Nimrod. He is a totalitarian, thought-controlling king. And he's the first king, by the way. And this is the king that was rising to power, and all men everywhere were following him until the Lord came down and messed up their little party, which was to bring everybody all one together and think the same way, including Terah and some of the descendants of Shem, who were the only group preserving the truth. So God comes down in Genesis 11. He confuses the languages, and everybody goes out in different directions. Obviously, the direction that Abram was taken with his father, his grandfather, maybe even his great-great-great-great-whatever, Peleg, was in the direction of speaking the same language of the people that went with into Mesopotamia. Does that make sense? You know, the different people went different ways because they had different languages. Well, obviously, Abraham and his group, this group of Shem, settled in the area where they spoke the same language as the people of Nimrod. So what's the big deal? And I hope I'm not boring you with some of this context. It fascinates me. I was a history minor. Maybe it's just fascinating me, but it is very interesting. Terah, he is the last of the line of Seth that we read about before Abram, eventually Abraham. And Terah's name, in one of its derivations, one of its definitions, means moon. Okay, so you remember weeks ago or months ago, I did a comparison of how the children, the descendants of Seth prior to the flood, were naming their children certain things that honored God. And then I told you about the children of Cain, who were naming their children certain things that showed they did not care anything about God. Well, this is now somebody in the line of Shem who is supposed to preserve the truth. And now this one has named their child Terah after the moon. I wonder why. It's because they worship the moon god. Maybe wokeism was being imposed upon them. Who knows the reason? But regardless, they're not standing up to the culture. The last family with the true knowledge of who we are, where we come from, has gone over to idol worship. Joshua 24, I think it's verse 3, confirms that. Joshua, just a few years later, talks about how the ancestors of Abraham had gone off into idol worship. And they worshiped the crescent moon. Here's some information about this worship. One of the names of this crescent moon god was Luna, okay? Another name was S-I-N, and I don't know if it was pronounced sin or seen, probably more like seen. And it also was known because, but here's why, because it was a metaphor for the illuminator. Okay, light. Early kings learned to use religious beliefs to rule effectively. This false god, this moon god, was the king of gods, the lord of wisdom, the keeper of time, the guardian of the future, the devoted son and protector and guardian of humanity. This false god is mentioned in Gilgamesh, the Epic of Gilgamesh, the god of fertility, the giver of life. Listen to this now, the renewer of agriculture. Think about the mindset that they had after the flood. How are they going to make it? How are they going to live? They've got to grow food, right? So also in this area where Ur of the Chaldees is known to have existed over in southern Iran, they have uncovered a ziggurat, which is a pyramid, okay? And it's believed that the Tower of Babel was a, and I hope I'm saying that right, ziggurat. And it's where they went around and around, almost like a maze, and they kept going higher and higher. It was supposed to be a bridge to get to heaven. Nobody knows for sure why they were doing this, but whatever it was, I've got my ideas, God didn't like it. And whatever it was some type of affront to God, because they were trying to, basically saying, well, if another flood comes, then we'll be high enough and we'll reach heaven where we don't have to worry about drowning next time. Think about the pyramids of Egypt. Why? Why are they building those pyramids to reach up to the sky? And they would go up into the top of them often, or at the base of them, right underneath the top, and make their sacrifices. And the guy that's heading all this up is Nimrod. Think of the pyramids. Think of them being a bridge to heaven, between heaven and earth. There was a high priestess in this worship of the moon god, and she was usually the daughter of a king. And she was considered to be the wife of the moon god, and she lived in a sacred complex. You ever think, you say, well, what's the connection? Ever heard of Seed of the Woman from Genesis 3rd chapter? The Lord said the seed of the woman would bruise the head of the serpent. Well, she's married to a god. You get that? Where do you think they got that from? There's no question where they got it from. They got it from perverting the oral tradition of what really happened. After they came out, and Noah, Ham, Shem, and Japheth, they began to share that with the generations. Now watch this. They lived under the rule of Nimrod, or at least the descendant of Nimrod. But I would not be surprised if it was actually Nimrod, because he probably lived for hundreds of years too. And if you take, the symbol of Nimrod was horns, the horns of a bull, because it says he was a mighty hunter. Sometimes you wonder, well, why do men like putting on the deer heads on the wall with the horns? Or maybe they have some connection to Nimrod. I'm just kidding. I've got some on the wall too. But that the idea of putting the deer on the wall, the bull head on the wall, whatever it may be, with the horns, it comes from those days of Nimrod being the mighty hunter before the Lord. You could extrapolate a lot of ideas from that. It could be that he learned how to form hunter-gatherers to protect them from large animals like lions, tigers, even dinosaurs. Yes, there were dinosaurs on the earth after the flood. Could be that he figured out ways to protect that. There's also other theories that he was a mighty hunter in the sense of he hunted men also and enslaved them. Even some evidence that they might have been cannibals. So you see, this wasn't just some sweet little choice of, well, I want to follow the Jacksonville Jaguars, or I want to follow the Tennessee Titans, or the Atlanta Falcons. This is not some nominal choice of what team you follow. This is a lifestyle very much akin to wokeism that's totalitarian in its mindset, and if you don't comply, you're put to death. It would be horrible to be under somebody like Nimrod, who has perverted the way of God. And within this incredible monarchy that Nimrod has built, even though he has had to, you know, take who he could get instead of all the people now, other languages have gone in different directions. Nimrod brings together who he can get. It's still an incredible kingdom. It's the original Babylon, and it gets revived throughout the years. Babylon rises and falls, and it rises again and again on down through the years. And like I said, Iran, Babylon is still over there today. It just has a different name, and it doesn't have the power that it had. But here is Nimrod in this great hierarchy, and he's the first king, and down there living in the city somewhere is a fellow named Abram, and his father has given into the culture. Can we identify with that? The light of truth is almost gone. If you ever had any reason in your heart to remain a truth believer is when you look at examples like this, before the call of God came upon Abram's life, the truth was almost gone. There was one family barely hanging on to any resemblance of the truth, and the name of their father was Moon, and they all worshiped the moon god. You think he'd given in to the culture? His father had, and named him after the moon. So here, Nimrod, his symbol was horns. And if you take horns and you think about how horns are shaped in sort of a crescent, are y'all with me? And they worshiped the crescent moon. So on the days that the crescent moon appeared in the sky, Nimrod had appropriated that to himself. And he says, see, and some of this is my conjecture now, but it's pretty good conjecture. If you've got some of your own, I'll be happy for you to share it. But I could just see Nimrod looking in the sky when the crescent moon came around and it was shaped in the shape of a horn instead of turned upside down, you know, like pouring the water out. Y'all read your almanac or holding the water in. So as you look up there, and he says, see, there's my symbol in the sky. It's on the wall in here. I've got the horns of these animals I've killed and protected you people. So worship me. My symbol's in the sky. He set himself up as the son of the moon god in a perversion of the seed of the woman. Very interesting history. This is what Abram is coming up through. This is what he's dealing with. His father is worshiping the moon. And not only that, he moves when God calls him out and his father won't let him go. The father and the family, they do leave. I'll give them that. They leave Ur of the Chaldees where Nimrod is in charge and they go to Haran. Well, guess what? Guess what the national god of Haran was? Guess who the mascot of Haran was? The moon god. It's just a different location. It's the last candle, the last little flame of for redemption, for your hope and my hope is about to flicker out. Wokeism has taken over and they've given into the culture and they have not stood for truth and even probably under the threat of death. And not just that, think about this. On top of that, the hope for the future, his wife is barren. She has not the ability to bear a child. Her name is Sarai. That's about as dim as it gets, isn't it? You know, Sarah's womb was like a metaphor, if you will. No future, no human power can help. The human race at this point, the redemption of the human race at this point, from a natural standpoint, they're worshiping the moon god. The future has no future because her womb is dead. There's absolutely no hope here from a natural standpoint, right? No hope. And Terah, he was unwilling to let Abram go. So you know what he does? He goes with him. So the call comes to Abram. And Abram, can't you see him go to his father and say, Father, God has called me. And I must leave you. I must leave my family. I must leave my country. I must leave my kindred. I must leave the worship, the monotheist, the God, that the one true and living God who stands above these polytheistic foolish worship of so many different gods, of which the moon god was the most popular. The true God has called me out of this, and I must go. And Terah, who is already torn up in his heart because he's lost Haran, his son, he just can't let him go. Aren't you glad that God is merciful and gracious? Because Abram is technically not complying with what God has told him to do. So if Abram was 75 when he finally went out from Haran and down into Canaan land, as I told you, Terah would have been about 130 years old when Abram was born. And Terah dies at 205. He's 205 years old. That's a long time to be on the earth, isn't it? Imagine living 900 years. Lord, give me my 70 and let me get out of here. This place is corrupt and only getting worse. Now, there was some legend among the Jews. I'm just going to share this with you. This was a little bit of legend among the Jews. And they said that Terah, this is legend, not Bible. The Jews said that Terah was the first that found out the way of coining money. And that in his days, men began to worship images, which I believe they already were. And that he was the chief of their priests, but afterwards repented. And that he was an idolater, which we're told Joshua 24 and verse 2. It says that he was an idolater. Now, that's just conjecture. Nobody knows if that's true or not. But he was definitely caught up in the worship of the moon, because his name was Moon. So Terah goes with Abram, and he stops in Haran, the city, another city of the moon god. And it was probably also ruled by Nimrod, but just from afar. And Haran was a center for cult worship of the moon, just like Ur. So Abraham's, he's just kind of gone halfway. He's gone with his father, and then he waits for several years, maybe 5, maybe 10, don't know for sure. I've always kind of said, well, I think maybe Abram was first called when he was 70. And then he finally goes out at 75. So maybe for 5 years, he's over here in Haran with his father, really just kind of waiting for his father to die. And so finally, Genesis 12, the Lord had said unto Abraham, you get the language? The Lord had said unto Abraham, get thee out of thy country, thy kindred, thy father's house, into a land I will show thee. And so Abram finally, under the merciful blessing of God, he departs as the Lord had spoken unto him. And Lot went with him. He didn't leave all the family, did he? He just felt so sorry for orphaned Lot, who was probably, 60 years old by now. He just felt so sorry for orphaned Lot that he just had to take him with him. Isn't God good? That he still showed mercy. But Lot winds up being a real sore spot for Abram. Remember? They have to eventually separate. So I give you all that history just to set the stage for what is about to come. What was special about Abram? Nothing. He lived in the house of a father who was named after the moon god and who worshiped the moon god. So what made Abram special? It was the call of God upon his life. And the call of God was an act of mercy by God for your redemption and my redemption, because the candle was about to flicker out of truth. God says, the seed of the woman shall bruise the head of the serpent. Well, you look naturally at Sarah, you'd be like, well, that sure doesn't fit the bill, does it? She can't even have a child. That's why we believe in the one true and living God who says, with God, all things are possible. He created the womb of Sarah to be able to bear a child. Sarah's womb had never worked. He miraculously made it alive so that it would work. And he also revives Abraham's ability to have a child, because he had gone past the ability as an old man to have a child. You talk about miraculous. Don't just look over the life of Abraham and just think, oh, well, ho-hum, father of the faithful. I'm telling you, the thing that made Abram special was the call that God put upon his life. And look, God taught Abraham through separation. Don't you ever forget that, especially our young guys. God taught Abraham through separation. He was to separate from his family. He was to separate from his father. He was to separate from his country. He was to separate from the false worship. He was to separate from where he lived and move to a place that he didn't even know where it was at the point when he left. And then he winds up separating from Egypt. When he goes down into Egypt, he separates from Lot. Think about all of those separations that occur in Abraham's life. And every time there's a separation, the Lord comes to him. The Lord teaches us through separation. Separating ourselves from the moon gods of the world. Separating ourselves from relationships that may not be productive or godly. Separating ourselves from the totalitarian thought processes that are imposed upon our mind today. And separating us and teaching us. I'm telling you, when God calls you and you separate yourself from yourself, he will teach you some amazing things. Abraham had to do a lot of separating. The Lord didn't pick him up by the nape of the neck and say, now you're separated, did he? He called him, born him again by his spirit, and he said, now come, follow me, come out. And you know what Abraham had to do? He had to walk. It's amazing how the providence of God works and plays in and ties in with the steps of puny little man, isn't it? That puny little man who was nothing, who was a worshiper of the false god, the moon god, he walks from Haran into the promised land. God appears to him. He walks where he goes. God appears to him. At least 7 times, God appears in the separation of Abram. And eventually he gives him that wonderful name. He goes from being named High Father, which was almost probably used to be a joke against him or to mock him. Yeah, you're the high father, all right. You don't even have any kids. And God changes his name to Abraham, father of many nations. How about that? Don't just look over Abraham. And don't just take him for granted. He wasn't some kind of superhero of faith. He was just like you, just like me, tempted as in all points, just like everyone else. But he embraced the call of God in his life. You know that's what makes you special? You say, well, I don't feel very special. Well, in your nature, you're right. You're not. I'm not either. There's nothing special. I could be the most moral person on the face of the earth. I could be do things. I could give to charity. I could, but in and of myself, in my morality, in my nature, there is nothing special about me. As a matter of fact, the psalmist says, man at his best is altogether vanity. So what makes you special? It is the call of God upon your life. And that is an irresistible call. You understand? God didn't give Abram a choice to be born again. What makes you special? It's the call of God. If you can't find any other reason to go on, if you can't find any other reason to glorify God, don't look within yourself. Don't look at what you did or you do. Look at what God has done for you. That's what Abram did. And if you're doing that, you're no different than Abraham. You know, today in modern religion, they tell you to look at what you did. When did you accept? When did you pray? Were you baptized? You know, tell us about your experience. You did this. It's all about the sinner. What did you do? I run out of things about myself real quick, but let's talk about the Savior. You see, that's where it's at. That's where our purpose is. The Savior has saved me. The Savior has imposed himself upon me against my nature. It's what he did with Abraham. It's what he did with Saul on the road to Damascus. It's what he does with an infant in the womb. And that is why you are special. Is because God has imposed his purpose upon you. You are called and you will be with him in eternity. So why don't we start acting like Abraham and walk in the direction that God calls us to walk? Walk away from the moon gods of the world, the Nimrods of the world. Sometimes we may even have to walk away from our family if they're following the wrong direction. I close with this. God told Abraham he would be a father of a great nation. He would have a great name, and a blessing would be on all the families of the earth through Abraham. Listen to this now. Maybe this will have a little more meaning for you in Galatians 3. In verse 6, you don't have to turn there, but you can if you want to. Even as Abraham believed God, and it was accounted to him for righteousness, know ye therefore that they which are of faith, that's you, that's me, the same are the children of Abraham. And the scripture, foreseeing that God would justify the heathen through faith, that's us, preached before the gospel unto Abraham, saying, in thee shall all nations be blessed. So then they which be of faith are blessed with faithful Abraham. Do you feel the blessing with faithful Abraham here today? Hebrews 11 and 8, by faith, Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he should after receive for an inheritance, obeyed. And he went out, not knowing whether he went. By faith, he sojourned in the land of promise, as in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he looked for a city which hath foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Through faith, also Sarah herself received strength to conceive seed, and was delivered of a child when she was past age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Last verse. Therefore sprang there even of one, Abraham, and him as good as dead. So many as the stars of the sky in multitude, and as the sand which is by the seashore innumerable. That's your father, Abraham. And it wasn't just in a vacuum that he took up on that title. He had to leave his kin. He had to leave his culture. And he had to separate himself from his country. I pray that that's our case, and that we'll learn wonderful things through separation. This is what Abraham learned himself. I hope that's been beneficial, this profile of Abraham, and may God be pleased with what we've looked at here tonight.